You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. I'm your host, Tracy Ross. Kate Lochte and Robert Valentine have joined me in the studios now. We're going to talk about an exciting event. It's the Robert Burns Supper, Saturday evening at 6:30 at the Murray Woman's Clubhouse. Thanks for being back on the show, Bob.
Thank you, Tracy. Good to be here.
Now, you've been sent by the West Kentucky Scottish Society to speak to the Burns Supper Saturday night, and you're full of facts about it, I understand.
You could say that. Certainly of something. Yes, indeed. It is, I think we should say, first of all, that the Burns Supper is, and if you don't mind, it's easier for me to speak in the wee bit Scots brogue.
We would expect no less.
I'm happy to do that. I just don't want any of your audience members to think that we're trying to put a job on them or make them think something is true, which is not true.
Never. Accuracy is our hallmark.
Great. And let's have at it.
Saturday night, it starts when?
Saturday night, it starts with the gathering at 6:30, wee social half hour, and then the haggis will be brought forth around 7 p.m., and the fun begins.
It's at the Murray Women's Clubhouse, 704 Vine Street. It's $25 a person, and we'll get to that business eventually. Is it a flaming haggis that comes in?
No, not traditionally, because of the fire marshal's regulations. But it is haggis. And I have to say that the Murray Women's Club is one of the most spectacular settings for a Burns Supper that you can imagine. The open beams in the ceiling, the great fireplace at the western end of the Great Hall, hardwood floor. It's just a spectacular location. It takes you back to the first Burns Supper, which was in 1802, I believe, in Greenock. And it was people who got together to celebrate the poetry of Robert Burns in Scotland. And since that time, Burns Suppers have been celebrated throughout the globe. There will be one in Shanghai this year. There's one in New York, probably several. Chicago, Louisville is having one. Nashville will have one.
How do you figure that this poet is celebrated today in such diversity? Is there another poet on earth that we celebrate every year in this fashion with toasting and reading of poetry?
Not one of which I'm aware. But then you have to remember the country from which he comes. And he was regarded as a national hero for preserving Scots culture tradition and the traditional Scots language, the Broad Scots, as it's called. So he was very highly regarded. I think that you could take the regard in which Dr. King is held today as something very similar because of his contribution to the people. You know? And so Burns was celebrated shortly after his death. The first Burns Supper came within 6 or 7 years of his untimely, early death.
He didn't reach 40, did he?
No, he was 37. He was born in, 52 and died in the late 1790s.
And he was extremely prolific in more ways than one.
Oh, yes. You're thinking of the near score children, I think 14 to his credit. Yes, and not always with benefit of clergy. But then he did turn out hundreds of poems and songs. Actually, they were originally poems and then set to music, probably by someone else.
And I hope you'll grace us with a few samples.
I won't say that it's grace. let me say this. That everyone who is listening at this moment has recited a piece of Burns poetry, whether you knew it or not, because on Hogmanay, that is New Year's, everybody gets together and they sing the Auld Lang Syne. Should auld acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind, should auld acquaintance be forgot and Auld Lang Syne, or old The Good Old Days is a nice way of translating Auld Lang Syne. And we all sang that New Year's Eve, I suppose, those who stayed up till midnight.
And this is an example of an old Scottish song that he preserved.
Yes.
For everyone to remember and sing on New Year's.
Indeed, yes. His rendition of Auld Lang Syne, his poetic rendition, is very elegant compared to other forms. The music to which it's set is, I don't know if there's great agreement among musicologists about when that tune was set to it. Certainly, however,
I just thought it was Lawrence Welk.
No, Guy Lombardo. Guy Lombardo and the Royal Canadians probably did more to popularize the Auld Lang Syne and to make it an article of New Year's than any other group. So it's fairly recent that everybody sung the Auld Lang Syne. But it is, it's typical of his poems. It's very deep and speaks to something very important, whether it's democracy in his poem, A Man's a Man for A' That, or humanity's connection to nature, which he voices in the poem To Your Mouse, that speaks to not only his understanding of very deep philosophical concepts and his ability to express very sincere thoughts, but also to his humanity in a very simple way. He writes of love and freedom, but he also writes, we were talking to our good friend Tracy, who is a Ross, I think, one of the great Scots clans. And there he is, a great strapping lad, haggis fed. he was saying, I don't fancy getting out the bed in the morning because of the temperature. Neither did Robert Burns. And we have to remember, he was a crofter's son. He was a farm boy. And his father, like so many Scots of that age, saw education as a route to freedom, wealth for the children. Otherwise, the lower class Scotsman was a virtual wage slave. And the only way out was education. And so his father saw too that Burns and his brother could be, Gilbert, I believe, would be educated by a private tutor. And this was an enormous undertaking for a poor farmer. They banded together, and the tutor went from house to house in a small cadre of farmers educating children. Burns had a great gift for language. But you have to know that in a season of the year like this, and in Scotland, this is all of winter. What we're having now, the 20 degrees, that's all the time. This, as a matter of fact, this is probably a balmy day in Scotland of Burns' time. Mm-hmm. And he didn't fancy that. And he wrote a poem called Up in the Morning. And it was about this season of the year. And he wrote, Up in the morning's no for me. Up in the morning so early. When all the hills are covered with snow, I fear it's winter, surely. And there are four stanzas. He talks about the poor birds won't be able to find anything to eat. And then the last stanza is a repeat of the first. Up in the morning's no for me, up in the morning, surely. And there's not a farm boy in Calloway County has not had that same feeling. Or a paper boy. Mm-hmm. Or someone who delivers donuts, you know. So, oh, please, could I just not this one more?
He got his dad's farm upon his dad's passing, and then he lost it. He wasn't a good farmer,
and he's neither farmer nor businessman. No,
yeah, he finally found a government job, right?
Yes, but he did have, you know, very nice opportunity as an excise man, a tax collector. Mm-hmm. And did fairly well at it. But unfortunately, it came in the late 1780s, and he did not make it through the 90s. And there's no telling what he might have penned. He was a very deep thinker. He wrote a poem essentially about the equality of man, and the central figure in it was a head louse, a crawling louse, you know. Who would use that as the text for talking about human equality? But even deeper than that, is poem To Your Mouse. And it occurred, he got the inspiration for this when he was out plowing, trying to be a farmer. It was after he had inherited his father's farm. And he's out plowing in probably December. We know it was December. And the plow overturns a mouse nest, just a collection of leaves and sticks that the mouse had constructed in the field where there was no doubt plentiful seed. left over from the wheat. And this is a good deal for the mouse. It's great, you know, location, location, location. Mouse, not the right place. And he ran over the mouse nest, and he heard a squeaking, and he turns around, and he sees the mouse standing now up on the furrow. That's the picture that he creates, that the mouse is standing up there making a rude manual gesture to him. And let me give you just a few verses to show what he's talking about. First of all, he addresses the mouse and says, "Wee, sleek it, cowering, timorous beastie, oh, what a panic's in thy breastie. Thou needna start awa sae hasty with bickering brattle. I would be laid to rin and chase thee with murder and paddle." And he says, "Don't make such a fuss, mouse. And you don't need to run away or make such a big noise. I am loath to run and chase you with some sort of stick with which to kill you." He said, "I would be laith to rin and chase thee with murdering paddle," murdering paddle, you know, and hit you. "I'm not going to hit you." He says, he apologizes. He says, "I am truly sorry man's dominion has broken nature's social union and justifies that ill opinion which makes thee startle at me, thy poor earth-born companion and fellow mortal." So in that second verse, he says, you know, really, we're all together here on this earth, and we all have the same challenges. "And I'm sorry I've wrecked your house," because now, he says, it's winter and the cold winds are coming, "and you won't be able to make another house and store up food in time, I'm afraid." And he says that. But then he says, "You know, Mouse, it could be worse." And he says it this way, "But Mousie, thou art not alone in proving foresight may be vain. The best laid schemes o' mice and men gang afterglay, and lee us naught but grief and pain for promised joy." And that's the verse so many people. "The best laid plans of mice and men often go astray," they say, which is very close to what he wrote. "The best laid schemes of mice and men gang afterglay." And then we forget the last verse, in which Burns says, "No matter what happens in nature, the lot of man is even worse." And he says, "Still thou art blessed compared with me. The present only toucheth thee. But, och, I backward cast my ee on prospects drear. And forward, though I canna see, I guess and fear." So he says, "Mouse, no matter how bad it is, it's only bad for now. You can't remember bad things that happened, and you can't imagine bad things that may, but I'm a human, and I can remember past hurts and insults and faults, and I can imagine a future and guess and fear." You know? So he's speaking, I think, about subjects very deep indeed. So it's no wonder people say, "What a great man, let's remember what he wrote."
I read that the government of Scotland dispels suggestions that the man was a manic depressive because of the highs and the lows, the rapture and the despair.
I would not disagree with that at all, except that to consider the race of humans as they are will take you on that same route. You know, one day you have a miraculous thing. You have a Thomas Edison inventing the incandescent bulb, which will dispel the darkness. And the next day, the Maxim brothers invent the water-cooled machine gun. You know, if it's not one thing, it's another.
So at the Burns Supper on Saturday night at the Murray Woman's Clubhouse, describe the proceedings, if you will.
The tradition is, and I'm sure that's the way it'll be, people will gather, they'll be seated. There'll be a word of welcome from the president of society, and then the master of ceremonies, which I have the pleasure to serve again this year, will call forth the haggis. And because the haggis is a traditional dish and represents Scotland and the toughest times of the Scottish people, the haggis will be brought forth. First will come the piper, the bagpiper. I think Mr. Ed Smith of Paris, Tennessee, will bagpipe this year. And he will be followed by a guard who will be followed by the haggis. There's really no serious need to have an armed guard to protect the Haggis, but there'll be one anyway. And then the Haggis will be born in, and then will come the whiskey bearer. It's traditional, and sometimes with some Haggises in the old days, it was necessary to have a large quantity of whiskey in order to be able to eat it. But today's modern Haggis, very tasty. It's like a meat pate, often of lamb. Sometimes beef, but lamb would be the preferred stuff of it. And the whiskey bearer will be followed by a guard, and they will bring the haggis to the table to be presented, rather formal ceremony. And then traditionally, there is either a toast to the piper, where we have the piper's dram. Sometimes that's all the piper got for his trouble, was a wee taste of good whiskey. And then, I'm not saying there will be whiskey in the women's club. And then the address to the haggis. Sometimes people refer to it as the ode to the haggis. It's not an ode. It's an address to the haggis. He addresses the haggis. And that's a rather long poem that extols the virtues of the haggis, which are, as a culinary delight, traditionally have been few and far between. But one of its great virtues is that it's made by hand. It uses everything that can be used to extend the health and well-being of a poor people, and that's what's being saluted, the auld lang syne, the good old days. And the address to the haggis begins, "Fair fire on his sonsy face, great chief near the Puden race, aboon them all ye tak your place, pinch, tripe, or therm, weel ye worthy of a grace as lang's me arm." Which means, "A blessing on your jolly, smiling face, great chieftain of the pudding or the sausage, mm-hmm. the best of all the sausages." You know. Now I've lost my place. And he's extolling the grace of the sausage, and he says, "Above them all you take your place, stomach, tripe, or intestines, well are you worthy of a grace as long as my arm." There should be a long prayer before we eat you because you're so worthy of it. And he talks about what it looks like. He says, "The groaning trencher there you fill, your herd is like a distant hill. Your pin would help to mend a mill in time of need, and through the pores the dews distill like amber bead." Which means the table is now groaning under the weight of you, the groaning trencher there you fill. Your herd is, which is a nice word for buttocks, and that's the shape. Sometimes it is, the haggis is shaped like that.
Sheep's bladder.
Sheep's bladder, right? The stomach of the sheep.
Yeah.
Like a distant hill. It means they're huge. And he says, your pin, and that is a piece of metal that was used to secure one or both ends of the sheep's stomach. Your pin would help to mend a mill in time of need. I mean, it's great. This is a huge haggis we're talking about, of epic proportions. And through the pores, the dews distill, all the rich liquid from the meat products, and very often they were not the choice cuts of meat, mixed with spices and oatmeal and filler in there. The dews distill like amber bead. And the amber bead he's talking about, no doubt, is a drop of, say, Scotch whiskey, which is highly praised for its medicinal qualities in those days, yeah.
And today as well.
I understand that's true.
So this Saturday night, there will be an opportunity to partake of the haggis, but there will be a menu of roast beef and vegetables mm-hmm. as well.
And
as
I think the neeps and tatties will be there. That's turnips and potatoes. That's a traditional dish. The turnips were easily grown in the harsh weather of Scotland. Potatoes were actually fairly recent. Potatoes were not known in Europe until the explorers, Christopher Columbus and the like, brought them back from South America, and they caught on very well. But in order to extend your potato supply, the turnip, which lasted much longer, was much hardier, grew later than potatoes, the turnip would be mixed in to give it a little more bulk and a little more flavor. And actually, nips and tatties is quite good. Quite good. So they're going to have that as well. And there will be a trifle. And there's nothing trifling about a good trifle. That's like we would say probably shortcake, with fruit and cream and more fruit and more cream and more shortcake. It's just delicious, great dessert. Yeah, much fun.
Okay, so this is an evening even non-Scots would enjoy. And again, let's tell you where it is. It's the Robert Burns Supper. It's Saturday night, Murray Women's Clubhouse. It costs $25 a person, and you need to make reservations ahead of time.
Yeah, obviously, because of the difficulty of preparing the food, they want the organizers want as good a count as they can get. And you can call the president of the society directly to make sure that the reservations are in hand. And that's Mrs. McConaughey, Debbie McConaughey. All you have to remember is Debbie, because nobody can spell or pronounce McConaughey. And you can reach her on a private reservations line in the 270 area at 227-0836, 227-0836, and say, Debbie, I want to make arrangements to be there. Should be a great time this Saturday night. It's the 26th. It's the day after the actual birthday on the 25th. I have a nephew who has a birthday on the same day, 25th. So I argued for naming him Robert in honor of Robert Burns, but they didn't do that.
Well, you have that honor.
I do.
And we thank you for being with us, Robert Valentine.
Great pleasure as always.
The MC of the Robert Burns Dinner this Saturday night.